This is FM 100.5 and 101.9, AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. Let you know that the first part of the show is brought to you by Stan McNabb Automotive, and they provide quality vehicles from Chevrolet, Dodge, Jeep, Ford, and Cadillac to the Murfreesboro, McMinnville, and Shelbyville, Tennessee area. Their large selection ensures that they have a vehicle for everyone, no matter what it is you're looking for. And for a quality used car in Tullahoma, visit their dealership located at 2000 North Jackson Street, and they have a large inventory of pre-owned cars, trucks, SUVs, and minivans to select from. At Stan McNabb Automotive, they pride themselves on the quality that they offer on all of their used cars, which makes them a major destination for used vehicles. And only at Stan McNabb can you get free oil changes and free tires for the life of that vehicle. I have a really special friend on today, Mr. Jim Averett. He's been on before, and I've had a number of people to ask me to have you back on again, Jim, because you know, you're one of these people that you really have a vivid memory of history and what's going on in this community. And you know, something my Aunt Nancy sent me, you know Nancy McNabb.
Yes.
And she sent my Uncle Ben by over here at the radio station the other day to give me a background on our family tree. And I had no idea that we go back to Captain William Lytle, who was one of the founders of this community. And, you know, I was shocked. And, you know, we're always bragging about our heritage. Everybody that lives around here does that. And we like to go back into history to what has been done. But I was proud. I really was.
Well, you know, sometimes you got to watch out what you wish for.
Sometimes we don't want to go back too far or spread the tree too far,
yeah,
do we?
Yeah, well, my late brother Tom was a he was a genealogist in our family. He'd started tracing our family. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, I had an aunt, Aunt Willie Golding. Mm-hmm. She lived to be 100. And she stayed with Tom, but somebody went in and asked Aunt Willie. He had no Aunt Willie. She had a real sense of humor, you know.
Just like you.
Yeah, but anyway, thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to come back up here. But somebody went in the bedroom there where Aunt Willie was, and they said, Aunt Willie said, we want to see something about tracing back the family tree. Aunt Willie said, oh, no. I said, I don't want you to do that. She said, you might find out at a monkey teeth on my family tree. So she didn't want too much for it. But we've traced our family tree. And not long ago, Tom's daughter, Gail, called me. I think it was Gail. She'd been doing some research about it. But she said she'd found out that one of our relatives was on the Mayflower.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what she said. Now, we hadn't been able to trace it and verify it. And I told her, I said, well, it might have been. I said, maybe somewhere in history I remember that there was one of those ships that had a dinghy behind it. And I mm-hmm. said, that's probably where our relative was.
Well, you know, the people that came over here were on the Mayflower and their original group that we can consider the settlers. They were having a hard time, a lot of them, in Europe. That's the reason they set sail for here.
Well, the reason they came over here was really for religious freedom,
right.
A lot of it. And that's the reason. Of course, this new secular society bunch don't want to admit that. And these people that, you know, want to be so politically correct. But our country wasn't founded by Buddhists and all that kind of crowd. It's founded by mostly the Christians from out of Europe that came over here to get out of the persecution. But anyway, talking about your family tree, we've been doing a little research, and our family, the farthest back we can get right now is our, I guess it'd be my great great grandfather, or maybe three greats, but anyway, Littleton Averett, mm-hmm. Came into this county in the late 1700s, and he was settled in the Barfield area.
Oh, and you have gone back quite a ways.
Well, we got back. We hadn't been able to find his parents. Mm-hmm. They all came in here from North Carolina. And
seemed like most did
for
at that time.
Most
right.
of them did from to Tennessee, uh-huh. but we haven't been able to get any further back yet, but because there's so many variations of the spelling of our name, mm-hmm. and so we're still hunting, but we hadn't got any further back than him, and he's buried out there in the McCord Averett Cemetery out in the Barfield mm-hmm. Midland area, and along with two several other. Relative.
You know, I wouldn't want to research your family much beyond you because you're one of the most interesting people. And we were talking about growing up here and some of our first jobs and what we made. Mm-hmm. It's an entirely different place than what you and I were used to now.
Yes. Well, I tell you about my dad was a superintendent, timekeeper, whatever you called him, over at the bucket factory. He worked for Mr. Patterson, and I was named for James Patterson. But anyway, we found some of Daddy's time, where he kept time, mm-hmm. and the salaries back, and the money back then. And it compared to today, of course, everything's relevant, but compared to today, man, it'd scare you to death. But
you couldn't live.
No, not today.
No.
No way. No, you couldn't. But
well, I was telling you what I was making when I went to work for Greyhound back in the early 60s.
Yeah.
And if you got a 2 or 3 cent raise back in, oh, man, you were a high cotton. If you're making $2 an hour and then you got a raise like that, your standard of living went straight up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, even up when I started work well, first job I ever had was I worked in high school. I worked at McClellan's, mm-hmm. and I sold bay rum on Saturday night to all the alcoholics. They didn't come in there to get it for any kind of tonsorial. They'd go out and drink it. But anyway, my first job after we married, I worked for a freight line for a short time in Chattanooga, but then when I came back here. I couldn't find a job that I was trained for, so I took a job with a drink company, Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola, yeah.
And I went to work for them. And that was in 57, I think, 57, yeah. We married in 56. It's 57, and at that time I made $66 a week.
Wow.
But I worked 66 hours, and that made it a dollar an hour. And
But that was an interesting job you had working for the Coca-Cola company.
Oh, yeah.
Company.
I had to be at work. I had to be at work at 5 to pick up I drove a Mack truck, mm-hmm. and had to go up in the warehouse, and they'd have that truck loaded and sitting on the side waiting for us to get in it. And then I headed out, and I had a vending route. I had to fill up all the vending machines, and I went to Vanderbilt Hospital and St. Thomas Hospital, David Lipscomb College, Aladdin Industries. I had a big route. And I didn't get back in until after dark every night. But it was an interesting job, but I wouldn't want to do it again. But, I had to have a job.
And, right.
And my wife was expecting our first child was expecting Jimmy, and I said, well, I can't find what I'm trained for, but I'm going to have to take something I'm not trained for. So I took the job at Coca-Cola. But then later on, I got hired by a transcontinental freight company and doing traffic office work. But I hired in there at $1.65 an hour, and that was big money. I didn't know what in the world I was going to do with all that money.
Now, how much would a new car cost back in
those? Well, the first new car I bought was a 57. I believe it's 57 Ford. I don't know. My wife's listening. She called and tell me.
She'll correct you.
But maybe it wasn't a 57 Ford. I don't know. But anyway, I bought, my first one was a Ford, and it was, I paid less than $2,000 for it.
Yeah.
Because the last new car I bought, I was in Valdosta, Georgia. Well, I was moving to Valdosta, and I bought a Ford Country Squire back then, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It had stereo sound and everything. Yeah. And I gave, I want to say about $3,000 for it.
Mm.
And it cost you, well, good night. No, when I looked at a house back years ago, I looked at a house here in Murfreesboro on Jones Boulevard, and it was new.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted $30,000 for it. And I said, man alive, nobody ever going to pay $30,000 for a house. And now you have to pay that much, or nearly twice that much for a, if you get a luxury car, mm-hmm. you pay twice that much for a car. And I said, well, that's one thing I'm not going to do. I'm not going to give $30,000 or $40,000 for something that I can't either eat or live in.
It's amazing how the cost of living has changed so much since that time.
But it, but back then you know, like I said, things were relevant. You mm-hmm. you went with what you had. Now my daddy probably never made over $50-$60 a week, but that was good money back then. And daddy managed to raise our family. He bought a house over there in Westview on mm-hmm. Bridge Avenue back in 25. He did right well, and then of course he started buying property. But you did what you had to do. But
well, you became interested in the ministry sometime after that.
52.
And you actually went to Chattanooga Tennessee Temple.
I went to Tennessee Temple. I graduated in 69, but I went first there in 55, and then I dropped out and I pastored 10 years before I went back.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to Chattanooga, and after I graduated, I was working in the freight line, and at the time I left the freight line, it wasn't uncommon to bring home $700-$800 a week after taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Because by then the thing had unionized and wages had gone way up. But when I graduated, I had a church. I took a church in Tryon, Georgia, mm-hmm. North Georgia, a little textile mill town, and I took a church there. And I started out at $150 a week. And they said, don't change your lifestyle, son. They want nothing to change it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd already said, well, when I get out of school, I told the company when they transferred me, that's something that how the Lord worked things out. The company transferred me to Chattanooga when the company sold out, and the company that bought us wanted to relocate some. Mm-hmm. And so they asked me one day, well, first they sent me to, they let me go out to Lubbock, Texas and look over. They wanted me to go out there, traffic department. I got out there and saw that the country out there was so flat and the wind blowed all the time. And if you wanted a garden, you asked the guy up ahead of you which garden, what you wanted to plant, because the wind's going to blow his garden down to you. And so when I got back home, I told the terminal manager there, I said, no, I don't want to go to Lubbock. They'd offered to pay my tuition out there to a Baptist college at Midland.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, just forget that. And Mr. Julian Hooper used to live here in Murfreesboro. He was our traffic manager.
Mm-hmm.
Great fella, great man. And he went out there and he come back. He stayed out there about 2 years and he come back. He said he couldn't stand it. But anyway, I come back and one day the terminal manager from Chattanooga came in and he said, would you like to go to Chattanooga? I said, yes, sir. I said, when you want me to go? Mm-hmm. He said, well, I could just be there the first of the month. And I was a rate clerk and I had one of these new, at that time it was new, now it's outdated, but I had a new calculator and everything. And I said, well, you got any kind of machinery? He said, you bring your calculator with you. So they let me take that brand new calculator and go. Well, I went to Chattanooga. And I told them when I got there, I said, now, I'm going to go back. The only reason I'm coming, really, well, it's for the company, but I want to go back to school. and finish my schoolwork. And then when I do, I'm gonna leave the company and take a church full time, because that's what I'm called to do. Mm-hmm. And so I did, and I went in there making $150 a week. I think it's $150, but anyway, it wasn't much. But you know what? I hadn't missed a thing. I hadn't looked back. I don't regret it. And of course, I spent 50 something years in the ministry. And I hadn't quit yet. I'm still available to preach somewhere, but I am not pastoring now. But I haven't regretted it at all.
And you were over at Bellwood for a long time.
26 years.
I mean, when you talk about Bellwood Baptist, you automatically think of Jim Averett. I mean, you two are intertwined.
Well, most of the time when they talk about the church, you know, Brother Medlock comes in mind first. But I've been there, and of course I was born up the street from Westview, a block up the street. My mm-hmm. parents were charter members of the church, and so I've been there in the church all my life, really, and just left for a few years to pastor outside the city. But mm-hmm. I came back in 1974 and spent about four years, and then I went to Kentucky, and then I came back in 1984. But God's been good,
I think we've got a phone call on the line.
Well, good.
Caller, welcome aboard, Brother Jim Averett.
Hey, Brother Averett and Truman, it's good to hear your voice, Brother Averett. I was just going to tell you, on that Coca-Cola truck, I tried that back in 59. I lasted a week. And it's like you said, you leave at dark and you get back at dark. And I just want to tell you, I've been missing you coming down to the Annville Center. I hadn't seen you in a while, so glad to know you're still doing it. Okay?
We'll probably be there Saturday.
Well, I'll be there Saturday, if the good Lord's willing. I'll be looking for you.
All right, bud. Thank you a lot. Was you in Nashville or here in Murfreesboro to Coca-Cola Company?
Murfreesboro.
Okay, Murfreesboro.
Out here on Broad Street.
Well, you better be glad you wasn't in Nashville.
I'll never forget that week I worked for the Coca-Cola Company. I tell you what, we'd go in them stock rooms, and the guy was training me. He wouldn't even turn the lights on. I said, well, I can't see them bottles. That's back when they had them returnable bottles, you know, 3 cent bottles.
Oh, yeah.
He said, you're going to have to learn to fill the bottles. Said, you don't have time to turn the lights on. So I lasted a week. Truman, I really enjoy your show, buddy.
Thank you. And what job did you take later on?
Okay, after I left Coca-Cola, I went to work for the highway department for 2 years.
Yeah.
And then I wound up with the fire department. I worked with the fire department from 1970 to 1982. I worked there with Chief Swan. Bobby Swan. He was one of the best fire chiefs in Murfreesboro.
Bobby was a great guy. He really was.
He was. He was one of the best. And I also had the privilege of working several years with Commissioner Claude Armour. When I left the fire department, I went to work over the guard force at Nissan, working for Guard Smart Security Company on kind of Mr. Armour. Claude Armour got me down there.
Good man.
Yeah. But I enjoy your show, and good to hear from you, Brother Avery.
All right, bud. One of the most interesting things about the Coca-Cola job, he's talking about that thing about the stock room. I went in one day at St. Thomas Hospital, and their Coke machines were down in the basement. Mm-hmm. And I went in down there one day, and there's about four or five guys in there. And when I got in the room with my drinks, they were upset and mad at me and just really having a fit. And I said, well, what's wrong with you? They said, you've been placing these bottles in this machine. Back then, you know, had the states on the bottom of the bottle. You remember that?
Yeah, in the city.
Yeah. And these idiots was accusing me of placing those bottles in the machines so that the one that I did it for knew when to put his nickel in the machine.
Of course, everybody would bet that their city was a further away.
That's what they was doing, distance.
Yeah.
I almost lost it there, but I told him, I said, you guys, y'all are dumb. I said, I work 66 hours a week. I'm working all 12, 13 hours a day, and I said, I ain't got time to be placing bottles in a machine for some idiot to gamble over. I said, you crazy as a loon.
Now, you would have to be pretty slick to pull off something like that.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't have done it. But, oh, they were, I mean, they were upset as they could be. But and then one day I was going down the steps at one of the hospitals, and I had two cases of drinks in my hand, and I slipped and fell. And my arm come down on a Coke bottle. The neck had been broken out of it, and it stabbed me right there. And so I went running into the emergency room there. I was in the basement. I went down to the emergency room, and I said, y'all got a Band-Aid? And the girl looked at me and said, if we put a Band-Aid on that, they'd run us out of every hospital in the county. Because I said, you got to have some stitches. Mm. So I called the route. I called the route supervisor and told him that I had fallen, and I was in the emergency room. He didn't ask me how I was. He didn't ask me if I was hurt. He said, how many drinks did you bring?
A lot of people, like us, we remember that the Coca-Cola bottles were recyclable. They were glass bottles.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I have never figured out yet why they did away with that, because I remember when we were kids, we would, of course, all keep the bottles, and we would turn those bottles in for something like 3 cents. I can't remember exactly how much it was, but it's something like that. And then you could turn them in and help pay for the Cokes that you buy later on, or anything else you wanted to buy.
Yeah, they were all glass back when I was filling the machines up. Yeah, I had to pick up the empties and take them in. But
did you guys, from the Coca-Cola company, did you guys pay the merchants the monies for the bottles?
Uh-uh.
You didn't?
I don't know. See, with the vending machine, I just picked up the empties.
Right.
And I emptied the money out of the machines, and then I took it in to the cashier every afternoon, and they had a big counter where they counted all that money, because I wasn't the only route man for the vending. I never saw so much money come in and change, you know, but they'd count it. But I don't know how they worked it on that, but it was an interesting thing. I was telling you about the route manager, you know, and the incident I had with a machine on the seventh floor. Coca-Cola Company, the only job there that I ever got run off from, and I praise the Lord for it, because I got a job making a lot more money, a lot better working condition. But anyway, I lost my train of thought on that. What I was going to tell you about that.
Well, you get to the point where you were fired, and how that came to be is where you were going with that.
Yeah, well, I hadn't cleaned a machine on top of the seventh floor at Vanderbilt, which it only sold one drink a week. And so I just didn't go up there every day. And but when I did go up, I'd clean it. But it just happened to be that I walked in on Friday afternoon, and the old supervisor said, you didn't clean the machine on the seventh floor at Vanderbilt. And I was a little bit tired. I'd been working all week, 60-something hours. And so I just... And by the way, I knew I was going to have the job at the freight line. I was almost certain I had it. But anyway, I just kind of jerked the cleaning rag out of my back pocket and threw it on his desk and told him that he could go clean himself. But
you knew what was going to happen after that,
didn't you? Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I lost it. But I went up to the... Back then, they paid you. Cashier paid you.
Mm-hmm.
And cash money. You got an envelope with cash in it. Pappy Bean. He was a fat cashier. And I walked up, and he saw I was more sort of a little bit dejected, you know. And he said, son, I said, don't worry about it. He said, we have about a 200% turnover here.
And how in the world do you keep up with your income tax if you're getting paid cash?
They just give me what they paid me, gave me a report, and I just took the word for it. I didn't try to pad it. I know that much.
I think we have another caller on the line for you, Jim. Caller, welcome aboard with Jim Averett.
Hey, Mr. Jones. I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Oh, I know who that is.
I've been seeing you out at the Y, you know.
Yes, yes.
You know, Brother Jim mentioned a word a while ago that just really, really burns in my mind. When he mentioned the word gamble, somebody gambling maybe on Cokes.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something, Brother Jim. When you mentioned gambling, I think of Claude.
Yeah, Claude the Frog.
Good good to talk to you.
Hey, I don't think I told them about what you've done out at Kingwood. I'll tell them, I guess. About the night.
Can he tell it, Murray?
Can I tell it? I'm going to tell it anyway, but will you let me tell it? We organized out at Kingwood, and at the Church of Christ out at Kingwood, and when we got in there, Claude Cockrell, Claude showed up. Claude,
I remember that.
He was in the audience.
Yeah.
And
I was there.
Well, we got all organized. We had a lot of fun doing it because I remember when they elected me to be the head of the coalition, you know, so I got up in the pulpit out there at Kingwood, and I said, I've always wanted to come up here. But me and Brother Mothers, we have a good time, and we're good friends. But anyway, after things over, we got out on the parking lot, and we was having some words with Claude and Murray. Murray had said something to say, and Claude come back with something. Oh, he come back with some kind of an insult or something. Murray, I don't know, where's that green jacket, or you'd be big yellow jacket or red jacket, but it was bright colored, Murray. But Murray took that jacket off, and he said, well, we'll just settle that right here. And I said, Murray, don't. I said, can't you think about the headline that's going to be in the paper tomorrow? Baptist preacher Cole Cox clawed on Church of Christ parking lot. I said, well, we don't need that, Murray. Murray put his coat back on. But oh, we had a big time back then. But I'll tell you one thing, that coalition worked. The first time in the history of Murfreesboro, I reckon, that all that as many churches got together to fight that social issue. And I said, I was really happy about that, and we beat it all 2 or 3 to 1, but we had a good time. Okay, Murray, you don't you go out talking about me getting in the wrong back in the back seat of my car now, okay?
I think he left you. All right, we'll take a quick break and let everybody know that this portion of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And that's Melissa Warren's business. And she started the business here in Murfreesboro because she saw a specific need for people who were living in their homes and were no longer able to take care of the normal duties that you have to have to keep your home up. And they come in 24/7, 7 days a week, make sure that they take care of all your duties, all the errands that you have to run. And you don't have to worry about a thing. You can enjoy life like you're meant to do. And give them a call at 713-4639 or check them out on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. And you can go over to their place. It's at 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, and that's right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard.
Southeastern Tire of Murfreesboro has the right tires for your vehicle. Perhaps you're a rugged individual who enjoys off-roading. They have a tire for you. Or maybe you're a rap star driving around on 26-inch rims. They have a tire for that. You're a mom who's in the carpool lane daily. They have a tire for your minivan. Let's say you're a wealthy trial lawyer who drives a Lamborghini. Yes, they have a tire for you too. Maybe you drive one of those new electric vehicles. Hey, they have a tire for you. Southeastern Tire Service has a tire for every personality. They're on Broad Street, a tire or two away from Chevy of Murfreesboro.
Play it again, sports!
25 to 50% off. A new shipment of scratch and dent fitness equipment is in at Play It Again Sports on North Thompson Lane. Exercise bikes, ellipticals, treadmills, and more. 25 to 50% off. Save now before the deals are gone.
The new Powerball is being described as bigger, better, more. But more what? So we asked the lottery number crunchers to tell us about more.
Well, more players will now win $1 million.
You know that for sure.
We've had 238 match 5 winners in Tennessee. With a new Powerball, they'd all have won at least $1 million.
That sounds like more to me. Play the new Powerball today. Bigger jackpots, better odds, more millionaires. Just $2. Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. The new Powerball is being described as bigger, better, more. But we wanted to be crystal clear on what bigger meant. So we asked a lottery spokesperson to clarify bigger for us.
The jackpots now start at 40 million and grow quicker than ever.
And that's bigger than before?
Yes, it's actually twice as big.
Which makes it twice as fun.
Play the new Powerball today. Bigger jackpots, better odds, more millionaires. Just $2. Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hot Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
In today's tough economy, there is one real estate team that stands out from the rest. Ann Hoke & Associates has built a reputation of success throughout Rutherford County. Ann's professional staging and exceptional service will combine to help sell your home in a timely manner. When it's your time to buy or sell, just ask Ann.
This is Ann Hoke of Keller Williams Realty. I would love to personally talk with you. Call me today at 397-4024. Sell faster and buy smarter with Ann Hoke & Associates.
Let's look ahead and see what's happening in our community. If you love musicals, Guys and Dolls is showing through January the 22nd at the Center for the Arts in Uptown Murfreesboro. For more information, call the Center for the Arts at 904-ARTS. Now through January the 14th, you're encouraged to recycle those Christmas trees. Be sure to take the tinsels and decorations off, and if you live in Murfreesboro, put them right there on the curb or take them over to the farmer's market. The drop-off point for listeners in the Smyrna area is the Lee Victory Park. Once again, this is now through January the 14th. Make those New Year's resolutions to get fit and lose weight come true. Right now, through the end of the month, buy your tickets to SportsCom and the Patterson Community Center at 25% off. You better hurry. That's through the end of this month only. You need to make a note of this. On Saturday, January the 14th, a Celtic band concert at the Barfield Crescent Park. And it's free. The Secret Commonwealth performs. The gates open at 5:30 and the music starts at 6:30. That's Saturday, January 14th at the Barfield Crescent Park. And we say thank you to the Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation Department for this great service. And those are Good Neighbor Events.
Before the cold winter wind blows, be sure to take care of your car. Bring it by and let us check the battery and coolant. We'll do a complete car check, look at tires, wipers, and more to make sure it's safe for the road. That's Todd's Complete Auto Care. We're on Southeast Broad Street, 962-9050.
It's The Truman Show, a look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And today's guest, Brother Jim Averett.
And welcome back with us. We'll let you know this portion of the show is brought to you by Gold and Coin Connection. And they're located at 2568 South Church Street. That's beside Gateway Tire Center in the Strip Mall. And Pastor Larry Dunn of ERO Ministry and Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly are the owners, and they buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware. They have vintage sports collectibles and even some great antiques. For a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today. And that's the Gold and Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street, or give them a call at 890-2646. Did you want to finish that story on how you got sacked at Coca-Cola?
Well, when I went in that afternoon, and the supervisor, he told me that. Well, I knew he didn't have any. He didn't go out there himself. So, but I found out that later on that the maintenance man who went out and serviced all those machines happened to get called to that machine, and He found that it hadn't been wiped off, and he's the one that ratted me out. And that was Franklin Cooper, Mr. Cooper. You know, uh-huh. he later on, you know, he owned a cafe, City Cafe, over here for a while, and I went up there, but he never did remember that, and I didn't really connect the two for a good while, but anyway he was doing his job, you know. He had to report things like that, but he was the one that ratted me out.
Makes you wonder how in the world they kept the machine up there on that seventh floor when it wasn't making any money anyway.
Well,
it was costing them money.
I don't know why, but like this, at that time, now I don't know where it's that way. It's not that way now, I don't guess, but at that time the seventh floor was really it was sort of a suite, and a lot of the wealthier folks, you know, that had terminal illness spent a lot of their last days up there. And that's the reason it didn't sell many Cokes, because there wasn't many people up there. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how it is now. I know now if you don't sell a certain amount of drinks, they'll pull your machine. They did that to us over at our academy. Mm-hmm. Our coke machine just wasn't. Of course, our student body went down in count, and so we wasn't selling as many machines. So they pulled our machine, which, you know, that's just business.
You know, one thing we haven't talked about in the times that you've been here is about the school that you guys started over there.
Yeah, Brother Medlock, they started the school in 72.
Mm-hmm.
The church went over there in 63. And then in 72, the school began and been going ever since.
It's been a very successful school.
It has. Right now, we're way down, way, way down in the population in the school because, well, it does. It happens that way in the private schools. You'll have good years where the population, the student count will be up, and then you'll see it decline. Mm-hmm. In the last few years, homeschooling has really put a dent in the private schools because somebody said a couple of years ago that we in Rutherford County we have now about 500 homeschoolers.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, and so see that's potential.
That's almost one full school.
Yeah, at least half of them would be a potential of being in one of the private Christian schools.
Mm-hmm.
So we've suffered, but we're still hanging in there right now. We hope we keep it going.
You
it,
know,
it costs quite a bit of money to keep a.
Oh yeah, it does. And I guess the one really big advantage private schools would have in this particular day and time is all the pressure that's been put on education outside education to bring them up to what I consider an impossible level. And you can see right now that there's going to be a lot of clashes going on.
Well, this business now about the evaluation of teachers and all the junk that the teachers have to go through. And my daughter's a teacher, but she's a librarian. But at the same time, they evaluate her, but they really don't have any guidelines because when she went into the library, she had to set her own ways of doing things. They didn't have a guideline, you know. But then they come in, they evaluate her with the same thing that they evaluate a classroom teacher.
Right.
But these evaluations and all that, and the teachers today have got so much paperwork to do that they can't teach.
Right, you're exactly right.
They can't teach. And coupled with that and with not being able to even say boo to a kid, you know, and discipline because of this liberalism today that don't want anything negative said to their kids, you know, it's making it impossible. So, but the Christian school, see, our school, we first place, they couldn't dictate our curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't tell us we couldn't have Bible reading. We couldn't do that because we do it.
Right.
And they couldn't dictate the curriculum to us. And then we don't have we have to keep the standards up. We have to have the same credits that the state does, but we just don't have to follow their dictates.
For whatever reason, you have smaller classrooms, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we didn't let a class be over 23, 24 at the most.
I was noticing that some of the things that were part of the change and what they're looking at, of course, they're wanting the kids to perform at a higher level, and they want the teachers to be able to make sure they perform at a higher level. And one of the things that I looked at was that they're no longer going to have a cap on the size of the classroom, so the classroom can grow. So how are you going to gain attention to these poor kids that are lost in the population of the classroom?
It's amazing, I tell you. And, you know, we have a lot of good, great teachers.
We do.
In
we
our
really
school
do.
System. You know, people talk about even preachers will talk about the schools, but we despite the fact, I know we've got teachers who are just waiting for 3 o'clock and payday.
Yeah.
But to my and large, most of our teachers are there because they love kids.
Right.
And
they spent a lifetime preparing for it.
Right, and they could do a lot better job. They're doing a good job, but they could do a lot better job if they take some of this idiotic regulation stuff off of them. This is like business, you know, all these government regulations that they come in and the government's intruding on private business and even trying to tell businesses where they can locate, like the Boeing thing, you know. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. We don't need that. And,
no.
But all this stuff, so-called reform in education, I'll tell you what they need to do, these kids need to learn the basics. They're coming out of school. They can't even balance a checkbook. They can't make change because the age of the computer, they even let them have computers. They're not making them work things, problems out on their own in class. And you go into McDonald's, you know, the kids there, they don't have to make change. They just punch that thing in and it tells them how much money to give the person back.
But you know, the success stories that I hear now are from people who are able to utilize their particular talents, mm-hmm. and use it toward their goals,
right.
Like you. I mean, you've had all of these jobs in your life that you maintain just so that you can keep your goals in mind,
right.
and you have a great work ethic, and that's what I still remember having. Mr. Dennis Milnar from Eagleville on,
yeah.
The other day, who owns the organ company. And I was so impressed with him. He is a second generation U.S. citizen, and he told about his parents coming over here and how he got started and how he was able to utilize certain things that happened in his life to send him toward his ultimate goal, which he is there now. He has a very successful business in Eagleville. And, you know, at one time, our school system was going in all of those directions. They really were. If you had special talents that you could utilize, they would help you formulate those talents while you were in school.
Yeah, you take now in the school business, now they're wanting to have butterfly gardens, and they're teaching all this business about political correctness and green this and green that. What happened to teaching the basics of education that prepared kids to go out? What happened to home ec in the high schools? What happened? What happened to the shop?
Yeah, just about every school had shops back
then.
Yeah,
the agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the FHA. The FFA
we had boys. Well-rounded students.
Yeah, and because those kids that were coming off the farm that were going to be farmers, mm-hmm. or thought they wanted to be farmers, you had folks like Myers Parsons and people mm-hmm. like that taught in the agriculture classes.
Mm-hmm.
Professor O'Brien with the shop, you know. But what happened to those things? We don't have them anymore.
The teachers still have the same goals.
They
just need to be given the backing just let them teach.
That's right.
You know, that's what we want them in there for.
Because you know, I think back about teachers I had. Good night, back at McFadden back in the 40s. You know, but we've got the same quality of teachers today.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about it, mm-hmm. you know, when I think back about ours, of course, they were very disciplined and had discipline in their classes. Well, the teachers today would do it too if their hands wasn't tied, you know, mm-hmm. to have these kids learn, to sit down and learn, you know. But nowadays, if you say something negative, and even now in the educational system, they're wanting to stop. Having winners in sports games.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want people to lose.
Right.
Hey, listen, people need to find, kids need to know that down the line, everything's not going to be perfect. Everything's mm-hmm. not going to come out like they think it ought to. And there are going to be some losses.
Yeah.
There are going to be some things that aren't as successful. But you bring a kid up today, we're bringing them up to say, well, you know, you're not going to lose. And if something comes up, the government will bail you out. Come up living on welfare,
mm-hmm.
you know. We're raising a nanny state. That's what we're doing. So, you know, I think we just need to get somehow get some things turned around and get back where we can train Amen. Folks. And then, and even in, I heard on radio not long ago that they, a lot of companies are turning to technical schools and what we used to call trade schools, mm-hmm. but they're turning to those schools and those community colleges and tech schools for their workers instead of college graduates, because the college graduates are in there taking taking nursing or phys ed and something like that. Well, phys ed, nursing is good thing, but taking phys ed and with no intention of being a physical education teacher, right. You know, they're just taking the easy track. Mm-hmm. And it's ridiculous today.
Well, you spend a lot of money and a lot of time working on a degree that you're not going to be able to apply right. towards your vocation.
Right, right.
And you know, maybe it's going to level out somewhere.
I don't know. I'm
hopeful.
Now,
when you became the minister, pastor at Bellwood, mm-hmm. did you have a lot of your people from Westview come over there and settle into that church, or did it just come from everywhere?
No, not really. We didn't have. Of course, you know, the church had an unfortunate situation, and a lot of people had left the church. But when I got back, no, I didn't have a lot of folks come back mm-hmm. At all. We had some, but I came in. I said, now I'm not going out and trying to get folks back that left the church. They mm-hmm. already settled in to another church. I said, if they want to come back, if the Lord leads them, come back, fine. If they don't, that's still fine. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have a whole lot come back. In fact, I had one pastor in town, he was really stressed out about it, because he just knew when I came back that and he had a lot of our old folks in his mm-hmm. church, he just knew that there'd be a mass exodus out of his church.
And that happens.
And it does happen, mm-hmm. but it didn't. But yeah. And so I went over to see him one day, because he was a good friend, and I told mm-hmm. him, I said, listen, you don't have to worry about nothing like that. I mm-hmm. said, in your church, I said, there may be two people that'll come back. Mm-hmm. And I said, right now that's the only one that I think of. But as it ended up, one of them did. Mm-hmm. The other one didn't come. He's still where he was. Mm-hmm. And I told him that. I said, these people are already, they're settled in your church. They're working in your church. I said, they're not going to leave. Mm-hmm. And it's not because they don't want to come over where I am, but I said, they're settled in and they're happy and they're satisfied and I want them to stay there.
Right.
So we didn't have a great number of people come, but
The dynamics of churches change. But I have never ever known any particular church try to recruit from another church.
No.
It's just one of those things.
No,
that's something that happens.
That's not ethical.
No,
you
know, it's
you don't
not.
Do that. That, you know, in the ministry, you call that sheep stealing.
Yeah.
But no, that's not ethical to do that. To you know, I've known guys that maybe a deacon from another church would come and visit his church mm-hmm. just to see his grandkid in a play.
Right.
Sign a visitor's card. Mm-hmm. And the next week, the pastor that where he visited is on his doorstep trying to get him to come to church mm-hmm. over there. So, but that's not good. That's not ethical. I mean, you know, you don't do that. If the person that's thinking about coming back to your church, if it's Lord's will, let him come. But if it's not, just ask the Lord to keep him away. You know, you don't want to steal people. I mean, life's too short, and there's too many people out here in this county that don't go to church anywhere.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And it's like, you know, they said about an old Confederate soldier, you know, that come in, he'd gone out and killed or captured a whole bunch of Union, and he come back into camp and somebody said something bad, and he said, well, listen, the woods is full, go out there and get you one.
We want to let you know that the last part of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive, and that's Mark Pirtle and John Howerton, and their business is at 2006 North Main Street in Shebbleville, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, Take about a 20-25 minute drive, 231 South, just before you get into downtown Shelbyville. It's on your left. And go in and see what they've got on the lot. I'll guarantee you they'll have something that you're looking for. And go in and talk to the nice people and tell them what you're interested in. And there's no doubt in my mind that they'll work out a deal. And you can even pull them up on the internet before you leave, PirtleHowerton.com, or give them a call at 1-800-264-6800.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro.
Hello, this is Truman Jones. We have a new sponsor and one that you're going to be delighted with. It's National Healthcare, National Healthcare Corporation right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And this is where life is celebrated. Discover a different kind of care, one that ensures that you're surrounded by people who make a difference in your life. In 11 states, patients and residents feel right at home at National Healthcare Corporation's more than 130 affiliated healthcare centers and home care offices. Their family of facilities delivers exceptional rehabilitative, skilled nursing, and extended care in locations that are close to home and family. In line with their longtime commitment to provide a continuum of care to those who need their services at any age. And want to let you know that this is a local business started here, even though it's pretty much all through the Southeast. National Healthcare, Murfreesboro, where life is celebrated.
Did you get storm damage from the hail storm? If you're not familiar with the process, making an insurance claim due to the recent hail storm might seem confusing. Matthew H. from North Murfreesboro said, quote, Millennium Roofing has a certified insurance adjuster on staff. They insisted on being present when our adjuster examined our home. Now that's what I call service, end quote. Millennium Roofing is a local family-owned company and has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Millennium Roofing and Construction, 525-6725 or millenniumroofingtn.com.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with us. I keep looking out behind me, and I don't see any snow yet. Brian keeps saying that it may pass us. Is that right?
Well, a look at the radar that we can see right now in our studio here. Looks like it's going north of Nashville, but now there's some more back up the pike kind of in Illinois kind of swinging down. So
it's coming from the west east.
Yeah, that's not where we get our big snows. We get our big snows from the south when it comes out of Texas and comes up.
That's where, of course, you get a lot of moisture from that way, so I guess that's
right.
Why it is.
Yeah.
Well, what are you going to do this afternoon, Jim?
Me?
Yeah.
Little as I can get by with now since the weather's closing in.
You're gonna make some hot chocolate.
You were the only person on my agenda for today.
Oh, lucky me!
I didn't even go to City Cafe today.
You didn't?
Nope.
Well, how is the Amen Corner?
It's doing pretty good.
Those that don't understand it, Amen Corner is full of a number of preachers that you get along. There's absolutely very little inner fighting going on there.
Not much. No.
Yeah. You have the Church of Christ, and then you have the Baptist there. Yeah. Every once in a while, a Methodist will stop by. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. It gets interesting every once in a while.
Did you hear Mr. Milner when he was on my show the other day talking about sending out leaflets to all the churches because he was
wanting to sell them an organ?
Wanting to sell his number one, he thought client was going to be the Church of Christ because there were so many of them down here.
Yeah, he didn't know. Well, I told you about that insurance man that came to see me in Calvert City when I was in Kentucky, and he's the same way. He started selling insurance, and he went over to call on he didn't know anything about the churches. He was a hippie before he got converted, and he hadn't been converted long, but he come in and he said he went over to Murray, and he had an appointment with the big Church of Christ over there, and he went in and said, told the secretary, I'm here to see your pastor. And she said, no, you're going to see the minister. He said, uh-oh, I knew I was off on the wrong foot. I said, well, I'm going to have a talk with him, and I'm going to have a meet with him and the deacon. Said, no, you're going to meet with the elders. He said, uh-oh. Well, so he got in there, and he said, well, said, I'm here. Said, I want to talk to you about an organ. And the minister said, but we don't have an organ. He said, well, when you want one. And then they had a big laugh over it. And he said, I thought I was going to lose it. But he said, I wrote the biggest policy I'd written in a long time because they just had a big kick out of it. Truman, I appreciate you letting me come on here.
I really appreciate you coming on.
Like again. I said, we're sort of bombastic here. We talk about anything and everybody. Mm-hmm. Before long, we're going to probably have a list that Brian will give us when we come in here to people saying, please don't talk about me.
I don't think we're going to have that because I think most everybody loves to hear you talk about them.
But anyway, I appreciate it because I like to come in and talk about Murfreesboro and things.
Oh, I do too.
Because I was born here. I was born on Bridge Avenue, right there in the house where we lived. I was born there. John said I was born on the kitchen table, but I don't think it was that drastic. But I was born at 402 Bridge Avenue, and I love this county and I love the city. And I hope, and in the past we've tried to help benefit the city, and we brought some conventions in for Christian school conventions. So, but I love the city, and I love to talk about things and that's happened in the past. And
we will have you back on, and well, we will make this a continuous thing. Well, because I tell you, everybody out there loves you, Jim.
But any time. But you know, I laughed. I told my wife. I said, I wonder who didn't show up. And so what I done, I remember.
Oh, no, I called you ahead of time, big
boy.
But
I remember, I don't know if you did, but I remember back at Tennessee Temple, there'd be a certain preacher, and when we go in for chapel on Wednesday, Dr. Robertson had a certain preacher there, and he was there often, and it got to be a running joke when it was Tom Freeney, used to be director of Baptist International Mission, but Tom, when Tom was there, it got to be, wonder who didn't show up. Well, it got to be the same way. Dr. J. Harold Smith. Dr. Mm-hmm. Smith was, you know, internationally known evangelist. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Smith come in one day on Wednesday to preach in chapel, and he said, Dr. Robertson said, who didn't show up? He said, so I told my wife, I said, well, I wonder who didn't show up. But anyway, no, I enjoy it. I really do. And anytime you want me back, just give me a holler.
Well, I'll have a big uproar, and then I'll have to call you again because they'll be wanting to hear you.
Well, that's good.
And tomorrow we'll have Mr. Russ Pulley on, who is an SEC official and umpire in football. And he has a number of other titles that he wears. So it'll be a really, really great show tomorrow. And we'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And, Jim, you be careful going home.
Thank you.
This is your Good Neighbor Network, WGNS Murfreesboro, WETVLP Murfreesboro, W263AI Murfreesboro, and W270AF Murfreesboro.